Go for Growth Show, powered by Beepo.
All right, hello everyone. Welcome to this episode of the Go for Growth Show. My name's Mark Engelman and I will be your host today. I'm very excited to have Rob Nixon, the founder of Panalytics, with us. Welcome to the show, Rob.
Great to be here, Mark. Happy to contribute.
Great. So we'll get straight into things, Rob. Presently, you're the founder of Panalytics, which started as the Proactive Accountants Network. Proactive Accountants Network has been operating since 2005. And that business is predominantly a service business, or was predominantly a service business. Can you tell me about your journey with Proactive Accountants Network and how it's sort of transitioned into Panalytics?
Yeah, sure. So the services business is going great, very profitable. But we found a problem with it, and that was it wasn't scalable. And in 2013, we had an offer to be acquired. And anyway, that fell in a heap. And what we realized was that the services business that we had, the style that we had, A, was not scalable, and B, was not saleable. And so we had a bit of technology, and we decided in late 2013 to finish it out and see, will the market buy it around the world? So 2014, we launched our first app. And then late 14, we rebranded the whole company from Proactive Accountants Network to Panalytics. The word Panalytics being predictive analytics, also the Greek word for all being pan, all analytics, and that's how it came to be. So the last 3 years, we've transformed a services business into an online business, and now we've got clients, and our clients are accounting firms, in 11 countries consuming our content and technology rather than just having one country consuming our services.
Yeah, fantastic. And, you know, I've followed sort of a little bit removed, but I've followed sort of the journey of Panalytics. And from an outsider's point of view, or certainly my point of view, it's appeared like you've tried to, you've entered multiple geographical markets almost all at the same time. One thing that I sort of find really interesting is, you know, how did you go about that, and how did you decide which markets you should enter, which ones you should stay away from, which ones you do now, which ones you leave for later? How do you sort of work that out as a...
Well, so our first market was Australia and New Zealand, and that's where we've been for many, many years. And we've always had our eye on America, though. America, because of the way they operate, very similar to Australia, as far as our clients go. The size and scale, of course, and also the UK. And by chance, we're now also in the Nordic countries of Sweden, Finland, and about to be Norway. This has all happened very quickly. 18 months ago, we just launched in the USA. We basically simultaneously launched in the UK as well. And then 6 months ago, we launched in Sweden. And next week, in fact, we launched in Finland, and cool. Very soon thereafter, Norway. So yeah, there's simultaneous things going on all over the place. It is interesting, to say the least. We've got a back office team in the Philippines. We've got a team in Brisbane. We've got a team in San Diego. Sole one person in the UK at the moment, and a team of three in Sweden, and about to have a team of two in Finland starting on Monday. I believe I'll get to meet them on Monday. So. Yeah, it's been an interesting journey, and along the way we raised capital, you know, to build this sort of company. So we've raised a lot of capital with a lot of shareholders. Many of our clients are shareholders, in fact. 112 of our clients put in a lot of money to help us grow the business. So that's been pretty cool for the support from our client base. They dragged along 50 of their clients as well. So, you know, we've got a very unique shareholder base as well as client base, but all the clients are accounting firms. And we help them build great businesses. We help them, you know, grow and develop and run really good accounting businesses. So that's the quick summary there, Mark.
Yeah, great. And have you found that this, from a market sales and marketing point of view, have you found that the same tactics work in different geographical markets?
So far, yes.
Yeah,
so
okay.
So far, yeah. You know, lead with content marketing, build brand with content, run a lot of webinars, seminars. Dial for dollars, run business performance reviews to see if the fit, do a presentation, close the deal, you know, so that's been basically the way we've done it, in the countries that we are.
And, you know, so have you found any, are there any sort of marked differences between, say, working in the Australian market as the as compared to the US market, for example?
Absolutely. I'll just talk accountants because that's our bag. The attitude in the USA is vastly different from the attitude in Australia. The success can do attitude over there is fantastic. You know, they want you to succeed. They want to succeed themselves. There is not the tall poppy syndrome that we see in Australia and New Zealand that I've seen so far in the USA. There's a bit of it in the UK, but definitely not in the USA. So, you know, they're enthusiastic and they see what we've got as very unique and different. They've seen it before and they embrace it and they get stuck into it. So it's an attitudinal thing that I've noticed in the USA, and they're a delight to do business with. They're very contract bound, though. They know when their contract date is up for renewal, where typically the Australians are a bit more lackadaisic about that. And so the little differences there. They're prepared to pay, which Australians do as well. And I've noticed the Americans work massive hours. Like they work crazy, crazy hours. You know, Australians work good hours. You know, we're hard workers, but the length of hours that the Americans do in their corporate life and business life is insane. You know, just insane. Like I'm talking 30, 40, 50% more than a standard Australian.
Yeah, wow. Is that for better or for worse, do you think?
Well, we get in there and say, look, you're working too hard and making not enough money. We'll show you to work less and make more money. And I like that pitch. So, you know, it is, but they grind it out. So it's not uncommon to see our clients contribute and ask questions on our Facebook, people Outlaws, our number one brand value is Outlaw. Yes, our Outlaws page. They're on there on the weekends, you know, constantly on there on the weekends. Like, why are you in the office? Why are you thinking about work? You know, and then you go to somewhere like Sweden, where we've spent a lot of time with the last 8 or 10 months or so, and very, very, you know, 35-hour week, right? Very, you know, take the time off, take the month off, you know, if you want. Completely different again. So, yeah, there's a couple of changes that you just have to get used to.
Yeah, great. And how do you find selling to Scandinavians?
So, interesting. I was given a book on my first week in Sweden, first full week of doing business over there, June sometime this year. And the book, basically, I read on the way home. I wish I was given the book at the start. And the book was How to Do Business with Swedes. And basically, very beautiful culture, very lovely people, but they don't like saying yes, right? Mm. So an American will tell you black and white, yes or no, right? An Australian will as well. A British person, as I found out, will, you know, just, you know, be nice but not make a decision. But you, just getting the decision out of the Swedes has been very, they just don't want to offend. You know, they're such nice people. And so, you know, yes, 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 we'll do it. Okay, well, here's a form or charge by thing, sign it or fill in details, and they just stop. So that's been hard to come to terms with. Just give me an answer. Are you in? Yes. Mm. Well, where's your credit card? Sign the document, fill in details, away we go. So, yeah, it's been interesting. But they have embraced it, which is cool.
Yeah, great. And, you know, so you've just outlined what, like, one, two, five different sort of regions of the world. That are, you know, kind of similar but not. What tips do you have for anyone, you know, any of our listeners who might be looking at different geographical markets? What tips would you have for them?
Yeah, so first of all, the USA and the UK were direct markets for us. Set up shop, we made an acquisition in the US, a small acquisition that had a client base that we could leverage off and grow, which we had, that's been a very successful acquisition. And that gave us a jump start in the US, you know, to give us a very small monthly. We're a subscription base, so we bought a subscription business in the US. That gave us a database as well. And then we just had to grind that out. And that's been great. In the UK, we went direct and didn't have anyone to piggyback off, so that's been a bit of a grind. Now, when we got to the Nordic countries, that's actually a joint venture with another company that sells to the same market. They sell different things, but they own the market. You know, very large software company that owns the market in Finland, Norway, Sweden, Denmark. And, you know, so we're piggybacking off their customer base and getting their people to work with us. So tips, just do it. Find a partner if you can. Partner's always good. You know, one thing before we entered the USA, we shot some bullets rather than cannonballs, as Jim Collins would say, and ran a lot of webinars. You know, had some people help us to fill those webinars to see, okay, what's the mood here?
Yeah.
And then when we officially launched, we had that small acquisition. We attended some trade shows. We got a chance to speak at a number of trade shows. And then we organized our own events as well. Grabbed ourselves a database, you know, nurtured the database with content, cleaned that database up, and just got on with it. You know, you realize how small Australia is when you get to the USA and start doing business, see how big and vast that is. And you go, okay, we've been stuck in Australia for 20 years now. It's a big wide world. Let's not discount Australia, but realizing that our growth, particularly for my business, is definitely the USA specifically.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So Australia is probably a good testing ground for new ideas before you
launch into the States. Well, Australia is very innovative.
Yeah.
Look, very innovative. In my space, Australian accounting firms are definitely faster off the bat with technology, especially with different methods. But the Americans are catching up. You know, it is in a lot of cases, very traditional and quite conservative sometimes. So you've got to work around that. And different states, different states in the USA are different operating, different beliefs, different values, different speed, big difference between East, West and Central. And you've got to get used to that.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. So talk to me about software development. It's a pretty complicated, difficult and really frustrating thing sometimes. How did you pivot from business strategy that was focused on delivering a service and delivering coaching to one that delivers a software platform? And how did you sort of approach that with Panalytics, and what were the challenges?
It was very painful. we made a fundamental mistake. We didn't hire a serious software geek who knew what he or she was doing. So consequently, our first effort, where we had a BPO in India with 56 developers, not knowing what we were doing. And we invested, learned experience, millions of dollars, $100,000 a month was not uncommon type thing. And really, that all that project that was developed was gone in the trash. So that's gone. The turning point for us was when we hired a lead technology person, because myself and my business partner Colin, we are not techos. We have wasted, invested, whatever you want to call it, a lot of money by not having the right head of development, and understanding that. So, if anyone's going to do it, and you're not a techo, find someone who is, and in my experience. And they can hire the team, and with very, very crystal clear instructions what they want to build. And we're still building. Technology is expensive. Service companies, easy, get them started on a credit card or nothing, basically, and you're in business. Technology companies, vastly different animal. They're capital intensive, labor intensive, and often you've got to spend a lot of money before you get a big return. So, it's a painful experience it was, but it's worked out okay.
Yeah, I think getting that sort of those requirements documented right up front and in a sort of a clear way, so that the developers can start working with a plan and a pathway forward, is really important, isn't it?
Sure, absolutely.
All right, cool. So along with this, really interesting pivot that you've done with Panalytics, you've also written quite a few books. How many have you written so far, Rob?
Three so far, and never say never, but hopefully that's three and that's it. first one came out in 2011, called Accounting Practices Don't Add Up, Why They Don't Know What to Do About It. Second one came out in 2015, called Remaining Relevant, The Future of the Accounting Profession. And the third one came out a couple of months back, called The Perfect Firm. And this thing's like a thesis. It's like a textbook, a manual, a playbook, whatever you want to call it. 387 pages, a kilogram of, it's like a weapon, this thing. So, I actually wrote the last one as a legacy book. Everything I've learned about working with accounting firms is in there. It went to number one all over the world, which is pretty cool. And categories, its first month. So, but books are a marketing tool. You don't expect to make any money out of books, and books are a credibility building tool as well, a big credibility building. So a friend of mine taught me how to write a book, banged out three, and I'm slow typing, like 20 words a minute. And each book takes me about 80 to 100 hours of typing time.
Yeah, right. And so what's the process you go through when you decide, you make the decision, right, I'm going to write a book, I'm going to write it on this, what do you do then?
Yeah, sure. So first of all, writing books, if you are attempting to be a brand of some sort and you're a subject matter expert, writing books really puts a stamp on that. And there's a lot of good reasons to write a book. And it's not as hard as everyone thinks it is. It is definitely time consuming, but it's not that hard. And so first of all, and fatal mistake, and I've done this three times in a row in all three books, is to lock out time in the diary, like 2 or 3 hour blocks, and knowing how long it's going to take. A book might be 50,000 words. Mm. Well, how long is it going to take you to type 50,000 words? You know, and so with research time, if you need it. You know, so for me, you know, the latest one was close to 100,000 words, something like that, but mostly around 50,000. So first thing is to block out time in diary, sacrosanct time, writing time, and you are there to punch out words, right? 2 or 3 hours at a block. I am not a Mac user, I'm a PC user, so my battery life is not as great. So the way I would do it is take my laptop, my PC, to a cafe, and when the battery went flat, I was done. So that was my little style.
Yeah.
And so the first thing is to block out time. Second thing is to do the outline. And think of a book as chapters, 10 chapters, let's say. You may have a title in mind for the overall book, but typically that changes as well. Mine changed midstream, this last one. And write the chapters. So you're going to design the architecture of the book first. You don't start writing first at all. You design your chapters, you know, and say, okay, first chapter one is going to be called this, chapter two this, chapter 10 this, etc. And then within the chapter, you design 4 to 5 sub-chapters.
Mm.
4 to 5 sub-chapters that lead into the total chapter. You know, particularly writing a business book where it doesn't really have to flow chapter to chapter. Every chapter on its own could be a standalone. So 10 or 12 chapters, 4 to 5 key points per chapter. So literally do the skeleton first. And then you write an article per sub-point. Mm. So the article could be 1,000 to 1,200 words. So you write an article about that particular piece. And you write another one, you write another one, you write another one, and pretty quickly, if you've got, 12 chapters and 4 points each, that's 48 articles and 1,000 words each, it's 1,200, you've got 50,000 words. You have a 200-page book right there. And so, and if you're working out, okay, how long does it take you to write an article of 1,000 to 1,200 or 1,500 words? And you might punch that out in, maybe an hour and a half, for me, a bit slower, a bit two, okay? And you can chunk it right down like that. And then you just get busy and you just wind through it. Now, fatal mistake, which I've done three times in a row, is not keeping the momentum going.
Mm.
Locking out the time in the diary, did all that, and then I get started. I did this three times in a row, and I stopped. And it stopped might be for 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks, and then it's so, for me, so hard to pick it up again, right? If you're going to commit to it, you knock it out over a period of time, could be 3 months, two or three months, you might put in, you know, every second day, 2 or 3 hours or whatever it is. And pretty quickly, if you need 100 hours, you need 50 blocks of two. If you're a quicker typer, you might do 60 hours, 20 blocks of three, for example, and just hunker down. Yeah, but first of all, you do the skeleton, just like building a building, you do the arc, you do the drawing first. And what I've found a lot of budding authors, they start writing first, right? No. I was taught by a guy who's already written 56 books. You do the skeleton first, then you start filling in the blanks.
Yeah.
And you can also jump around. It doesn't mean you're going to do chapter one, then chapter two. You can go chapter one, chapter six, then come back to three.
Yep. And so what's been the benefit to you now that you've got three books? What's...
It's like a massive business card.
Yeah.
Right? Speaking engagements. I've got a lot of speaking engagements on the back of books. Speaking engagements lead to other opportunities. Clients, et cetera, other speaking engagements. People buy the books, which is great, but there's no money in books. Unless you're a world famous author, you sell half a million of them.
But yeah, sure.
Business books, if you sell 5 or 10,000, you're doing great. but it's what the credibility it builds, it brings you, you know. So it's a credibility builder, a brand builder, and, you know, the thing you get from it is that speaking engagements help you promote your business.
Yes, great. All right. Well, thanks, Robert. We're almost nearing the end of the interview. Second last question. What's your number one tip for business owners and entrepreneurs looking to grow their business?
Number one, only one.
You can give me your top three if you like.
Growth. It's an interesting.
It means different things to everyone.
Yeah, top line, bottom line, whatever, geographical, whatever. I think there's three things to consider for growth for any business. It doesn't matter what you're in. Number one is, what is the brand all about? You know, what do you stand for? You know, and how do you curate that brand? Number two is understanding your target market and database. You know, so who you're going for. You're very, very specific. Like, we have a niche market. We only work with accounting firms. There's 1.27 million accounting firms in the world. We're a global expert in and about them. That's our brand of helping them. And then number three is activity. You know, do lots of activity, direct response activity, you know, marketing, webinars, emails, seminars, you know, whatever's appropriate to get to your target market. But, you know, I find a lot of people are not crystal clear about target market. You know, you can do all the wheel spinning, all the promotion under the sun, but not really crystal clear targeting niche markets, demographics, psychographics, of understanding who it is you're actually targeting, because all the marketing, growth, sales activities, you know, under the sun, will be far more fruitful if you know exactly who it is you're after. So yeah, brand, database, and activity.
Yeah, great advice. Couldn't agree more. So last question, have you used any new technology apps or services recently that have really assisted you in saving time within your business?
Well, we've been 100% cloud since 2010 or 11. So always looking at different apps for cloud to integrate. Love Zoom that you're using here, Mark. Use it, you know, literally every day. Zoom is amazing. You know, Zoom on a 3G connection, basically free. To world-class video conferencing, you know, Zoom is great. You know, I hardly do phone calls anymore. It's always a Zoom call. I'm outside of my iPad right now. So, you know, as an example, Zoom's great. And just looking at, you know, got to be cloud, of course. There's no other way. You know, tools that help you go faster, right? So what is going to help you, your business, your people go faster, more efficiency, and get the job done? So we, I don't know, we have 50 or 60 apps that we use all the time, all connected through one single sign-on portal, you know, and you know, we're mobile. You know, we've got people all over the world, people traveling all the time, so we've got to have tech that makes us mobile. There's not one piece, I don't think. It's more so just looking at technology that makes you more efficient. More efficiency means less people to hire. Less people to hire means less cost. More efficiency means speed, and speed is the name of the game, you know, because you know, so many businesses out there, you know, technology is disrupting them. So why not be the disruptor and use technology to help you?
Yeah, no, great advice. All right, Rob, well, thank you for your time. That's all the questions I have for you.
Easy.
Thank you, and I'll talk soon.
All the best. Thanks, mate.
The Go for Growth Show, powered by Beepo.